WFAE streaming is funded by Garage Door Guru, providing local comprehensive garage door service for over 12 years, including detailed repairs and door installations, offering fine German-made garage doors. Details, go garagedoorguru.com.
This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. There are many ways to make a difference in a community. One of the newest ways is already bearing fruit. It's called Venture Philanthropy. It's being put into practice in Charlotte by a group called Social Venture Partners. These are people who leverage their collective expertise, creativity, time, and financial resources to develop and support what they perceive to be promising social initiatives with the potential for sustainable, measurable, and positive impact. Social Venture Partners created what they call the Seed 20 program to help them realize their vision. And we're going to meet some of the people behind this new model of giving, as well as a member of one of the recipient organizations. Will Miller is the founder. He was supposed to be with us this morning, but we banned him from the studio because he has the flu. No one comes in here with the flu. So Steve Sellers is quickly filling in. Steve is a partner with Social Venture Partners and lead partner with the Seed 20 initiative. He has long experience as a partner with venture capital and equity-backed companies and is currently in the executive search business. And you've been with this effort for 7 years, is that right?
Been a partner since 2007.
Okay, well, we'll talk about all that as we go through the program. Along with Mr. Sellers is Susan Daniel. She is the group's executive director. Welcome to the program.
Thank you.
And also Jennifer Davis-Martin is with us. She is a Seed 20 coach and member of the Seed 20 Steering Committee. Thank you for joining us.
Bye.
Seed 20 is actually a contest, which we'll talk about as we go through the program. But we have one of the finalists from last year with us, too. Robin Emmons is executive director of So Much Good. That's S-O-W, So Much Good. Welcome to the program as well.
Thank you.
How old, you mentioned 2007, but I think it dates back before that, doesn't it? How old is venture philanthropy as a concept, and when did it actually come to Charlotte?
Well, it really began in 1997 in Seattle. There was a man, the former president of Aldus Corporation, named Paul Brainerd, who had a vision that he wanted to start a philanthropic organization that was based on venture capital, a venture capital model, whereby you would make an investment and then nurture that investment with your resources and guidance.
Now, I don't know much about venture capitalists, but I have one in the room, so I'm going to find out everything I've ever wanted to know. Venture capitalists don't seem to be the kind of people necessarily that would be – this would be a dalliance. This would be something that would takes their mind off the ball or keeps their eye off the ball, because you're in the business of finding companies for investors to make money in, right?
Well, in the past, I have been with companies that have benefited from venture capitalists that have invested. And venture capitalists look for promising ideas in companies, and then they invest their resources, money, time, networks to help them grow. And so the parallel in the nonprofit world or venture philanthropy is taking that same approach, finding ideas, people who have a passion around a social initiative and that can have a significant impact, but would benefit from an organization, essentially a venture philanthropy organization, coming in and committing resources, time, monies, to help them grow faster than they normally would.
But venture capitalists want a return on investment for their own pocketbooks, right? So what's the return on investment for a venture philanthropist?
Venture philanthropists are looking, the return they look for is the increased impact in the community. And so it's not a monetary return to them, to the venture philanthropist, it is an increased impact in the community. Now, they take a similar approach in that when they invest resources or when we invest resources, we're looking for milestones. We're looking for results, as are the social entrepreneurs. So that we team up with them to go and increase the growth and impact in the community. So the return for a venture philanthropist will be that increased impact to the community.
Now, I know you started in 2005, and I think you had 14 investors. How many are there today?
We have now 90 individual investors, or we call them partners.
Okay.
in our organization.
And because there are so many ways that people are encouraged to give money, when it comes to making financial contributions to nonprofits or charitable organizations and making a difference in the community, what do you say to people to attract them to this model? What's the difference in terms of making them think that this is the way they should do their giving?
I think one of the differences is this allows depth, and you are able to do more than just write a check. But we encourage you to get involved and actively engaged, actively educated about the nonprofits with whom we partner in the community. And so our members give strategic counsel, they give their professional skills, they give their passion and their time in partnership with the nonprofits more than just their money.
I was going to ask if that, when you look at, when you sat down, whenever, how many years ago that was that you started here, and you looked around to see whether, I guess you looked around to see whether there was a need for this or whether it would be well received in Charlotte, was that what was missing in that piece of the pie that sets you apart? Is that what was missing in Charlotte that made this an attractive and obviously becoming a successful venture?
Well, I think when Will Miller, you mentioned Will, Will had always been active in nonprofit endeavors, community initiatives, and he was looking for ways to increase the impact of resources, not only in the near term but the long term. And he heard about Social Venture Partners International, flew out there, took it upon himself, flew out there, met with them, and saw that the unique approach of resources, monies, people – focused in on promising ideas, there wasn't a real platform here in Charlotte to do that. And in similar to the for-profit world, so many of the breakthroughs that have happened over the years have started with somebody, an entrepreneur like some of the folks in the room that have an idea that's unique, and several years down the road, it's what's really making an impact. So Will started it up here.
Jennifer.
And I would say, as a partner who joined in the last 2 or 3 years, I definitely think it fits a need. As a person who wants to give to the community, what it does for me and my husband is the organization does due diligence on the investees in a way that, with the breadth of partner expertise and experience, they bring so much to the table. They can do due diligence, a very thorough vetting of the investees. So you know when you give your money, it's going to an organization that has been carefully examined, and that the other part of the equation is the results. It's an organization. Social Venture Partners doesn't just write a check. It's very much oriented to helping the organizations define what success is for them and how they will know they've been successful. And then the third part for me that I felt it Social Venture Partners fills the need of engagement. So there are some organizations that you want to write a check to, but it's hard to get involved in a meaningful way. And I think it helps you get involved at a level of these investees that other ways of giving don't allow you to do.
And involvement seems to be a must of the partners in this organization. It's not just writing the check, as Jennifer mentioned. It is time and being involved and making judgments and working with these organizations and individuals within the organizations, right? That takes a very special person, it seems to me.
This is not for everyone, because
yeah.
You really do want to have high engagement. It's a hands-on, high-engagement model of philanthropy. That said, we do have members who believe in the model, and we respect the ebb and flow of life. And so if they're not able to be highly engaged at the moment, that's okay. It's a guilt-free organization. Mm-hmm. We will take their support because it's their dues and their contributions that help sustain us.
What attracted you to wanting to get involved as opposed to just writing a check?
Probably the same thing that every partner would say. I mean, just wanting to give back to the community in a meaningful way. And I volunteered over the years, and it really is hard to volunteer at an organization at a level where you can make an impact. And that's what I really appreciate about Social Venture Partners is you get to interact with the person who's really shaping the organization, for example, Robin.
Now, I want to talk, Robin, about your organization and what it does later on in the program, but sure. just from the point of view of what these folks from Social Venture Partners do and how you came to be involved with them, would you have gotten any kind of funding from any other organization in the absence of this group?
Well, yes, Mike. We've been fortunate enough to get funding from other really wonderful organizations, corporate and private foundations that have invested in our mission. I will say that the huge difference in what has been missing from the landscape in terms of philanthropy is the investment of human capital. So the partners bring a huge value in terms of allowing us to upscale and to have a much larger impact in the community, because it's not just writing a check, to their point. It's people with various backgrounds and expertise that can come in and help us build infrastructure. So it's been so, so powerful for us.
Human capital. That means human being involved.
That's okay. Correct.
It would seem to me that there might be some organizations that would resist that involvement. They want the money, but they don't want the strings. How do you get beyond the feeling that there are strings attached when you have to kind of accept these people into the fold and listen to their ideas and be part of this? Because even in the venture capital world, when the money is given, it's not your baby anymore, alone, right?
Exactly. And I think part of as we talk to people, people who are successful in growing innovative ideas or innovative companies tend to also be folks that listen to others and that receive input well and learn from others and other experiences. But as you say, in the for-profit and in nonprofit world, there is sometimes resistance to that, but I think that's also part of as we talk to people and say, you know, where is a good place to put resources? A lot of times those will be the people that also say, look, I don't need just money. I would like to have other people's ideas, because that's going to increase the chance of our organization or our initiative having an impact.
So how did you get to that point? I mean, were you there before they came into the picture? Did you want this social capital before they came into the picture?
I was absolutely not there. So for anyone who has birthed an idea, particularly an entrepreneur, it's your baby. You don't really want to hand that over to anyone. It's really near and dear. But after a lot of blood, sweat, and tears, you come to the place where if you want it to be big, you realize that you cannot hold it close. You have to involve other people if the goal is really to have a large impact and to scale up, to have a meaningful change. You want to bring other people in.
And it's your idea, and you saw the need for what it is that so much good does, which we'll talk about. Then in come these people who don't have that close association with your idea, who didn't birth your vision. So how do you as entrepreneurs and venture capitalists come in and know what it is that she needs and wants and help her realize her vision without getting in the way and mucking up the works?
So for me, essentially, because of this vetting process that Susan spoke about and that Steve spoke about, the intimacy that is developed over the course of that vetting process, I think the partners that come on board and agree to work directly with the nonprofit have really a large insight into what is needed to get you to the place you're trying to go. Mm-hmm. And so I think those folks, they do come in with some level of understanding of what the organization is and where you're trying to get to.
Susan.
We are very clear when we come in and when we partner with our community nonprofits that we are not the program experts. But we also bring an array of experience, and we bring some business skills that the nonprofit may not have, and we bring our community connections. And before we sign a contract, they are clear. We are both clear. Both entities are clear of what we all bring to the table.
We have to take a break. We'll come back and talk more about this new venture philanthropy philosophy and social venture partners as well. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Charlotte Restaurant Week. From January 18th through 27th, over 100 fine dining establishments will offer three-course, prefix dinners. Details and reservations at charlotterestaurantweek.com. Now, I was going to say that New Year's resolutions center around breaking old habits, but one of our producers, Tim Ross, says it centers on. I feel a show coming on about this. But New Year's resolutions center on breaking old habits and creating new ones. And, of course, course, hopefully following through on them. Habits have a big impact on our lives, so shouldn't we better understand why we do what we do? New York Times business reporter Charles Duhigg has studied the power of habit, and he's uncovered some fairly interesting things about why we do what we do. He joins us tomorrow at 9.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, President Obama picks former Senator Chuck Hagel for defense secretary and John Brennan as CIA director. The battles ahead as the president seeks to build his second term team.
That's the Diane Rehm Show this morning from 10 to noon right after Charlotte Talks. On listener funded 90.7 FM WFAE, Charlotte's NPR news source.
It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about venture philanthropy. That was a new term for me, but it's been around since the 1990s. And Social Venture Partners is making it happen here in Charlotte, where Susan Daniel is the executive director and Steve Sellers is a lead partner with the Seed 20 initiative, which we'll talk about going through the program. Jennifer Davis Martin is a Seed 20 coach and on the steering committee of that set of social venture partners, and Robin Emmons is the recipient of largesse. She's the executive director of So Much Good. That's S-O-W, Much Good, which we'll talk about in a second here. How much is there a minimum amount of money that a partner has to put into the pot to become a partner? How does it work?
Yes, a partner unit, we call it, is two people. Often couples. We can have single folks. You can be siblings or friends, but it's $5,000.
What if it's one person with $5,000?
That would
be okay.
That would be okay.
That's a unit.
We have many of those, yes. $5,000 a year for a minimum of 2 years. Most of our partners stay much, much longer than that. Mm-hmm. If you are below 35 years old, it's $2,500. And if you're lucky enough to be working for a firm that matches your contribution, then it's half again of that.
Oh, and there are matching firms?
Yes. Bank of America, for example, mm-hmm. is one who will match the contributions.
People who are not, who maybe dabble in mutual funds and don't have the ability to buy into oil wells or venture capital kinds of activities, a unit is what?
Two people.
Yeah, but I mean, how many units are there, and does it matter in this sense? I do actually know about this a little bit because I was asked to invest in an oil well in Texas, which of course I didn't do because I know nothing about it and don't have any money anyway. But I don't know how they got my name. But I was offered one quarter of one unit,
right,
for a ridiculous amount of money. So does it matter in this sense that you're getting a unit for $5,000?
And in this case, because you're exactly right, that in a lot of these initiatives, organizations, a unit would be give you a certain amount of an ownership piece.
Right.
And in this case, the term is more to reference the group coming in and being part of the larger unit. So there's no specific.
So there's no voting rights attached to it, or are there?
Absolutely. It is a very partner-driven organization. Each individual partner, though, each partner of the unit, if you will, has a vote. All of our initiatives are vetted through a committee, and then they are recommended up to the partnership who takes a vote.
And you're voting on what? The organizations that you will support with the money?
Correct. We're voting on giving an organization little bit of funding and a lot of human capital.
And we've also talked about human capital. We've talked about people lending their expertise in addition to their money to these ventures. What kinds of people and what kinds of expertise are you looking for?
We're really trying to match the skills of our partners and their talents with the needs of the nonprofit organization. And in many cases, that's around strategic counsel, strategic planning, which is how one of the first things we did with Robin in So Much Good was get a group together and work on a strategic plan. It could be marketing help, program evaluation, IT work, legal work. Wherever the need is, we go in and take a real in-depth look at where the gaps and needs are in the community, in the nonprofit.
And specifically, some partners come to the table with experience in banking, some come with experience in building. So if we have an investee sheltering families intact, someone who's been in development or building might have a lot to offer an investee like that because they have expertise in that area.
Hmm. Go ahead, Steve.
Well, I was going to add, and really I think anyone who has a passion for having an impact in the community, their skill set, we're really not looking for partners with a particular skill set. Most anyone's experience coming in, if they have that passion, can be very helpful to a social entrepreneur. And also we leverage off the networks of our partners. So it's not always our expertise. It's, well, we know so-and-so, and this is a great endeavor. Let me pull them in and see if we can put them together.
Because I was going to ask you how you match or marry the expertise and interests of the people who also have enough money to become part of this with the needs of the organizations that you decide to fund, because a bad match can ruin everything.
It can't. When the partners come in, they fill out a profile and share where their interests are and where their skills may be and just where they'd like to get involved. So we do a lot of matching. We go out to the partners and say, we've got this opportunity, this volunteer opportunity. Is there anyone out there that would like to be involved with that? If we can't match it up, we do, as Steve says, and bring in consultants from the community or some of our friends or some of our business partners who could fill the need that the nonprofit may have.
Now, your stated goal, or one of your stated goals, is to effect positive long-term social change in Charlotte. Mm-hmm. What does that mean? What would that look like?
Well, we want to work with nonprofits where the outcomes will be measurable and sustainable, and we want to help them. We already have identified that they're doing vital work in the community, and we're hoping that our involvement with them will raise the level of that impact so that they can be more impactful. And they can do what they do better.
I was part of a panel discussion about the arts and nonprofit for the arts, and one of the people in the audience said something I'd never heard before. I thought was brilliant, and I'm gonna paraphrase it. I'm gonna get it wrong, and I'm very sorry for this because it was brilliant. And she said, nonprofit is a tax status. It is not a business plan.
Yes.
And a lot of nonprofits think, well, I'm a nonprofit. I'm just a little pipsqueak. And if you think about your mission as opposed to the fact that you are not going to make big money out of it, you'll be more successful and also presenting yourself to the people who could give you money. Am I wrong or right?
You're absolutely right. This is so resonating with me, Mike. That was a brilliant comment. I don't know who said it, but it makes perfect sense. Yes, my entity is a nonprofit. It's a 501c3. However, myself, I am a social entrepreneur wanting to deal with inequities that exist in our society, in our city, that create hardship for a subset of people, and really all of us pay for. So the long-term impact is eliminating those things and creating some self-reliance and meaningful spaces for the community to engage.
You also have a formula for success, and it is funding plus strategic involvement equals great community impact and sustainability. How do you know that?
How do we know we have succeeded?
No, how do you know that funding plus strategic involvement equals great community impact and sustainability?
Because we have watched it happen.
Okay.
We have been on boots on the ground and have seen the results of the marriage of business skills with these nonprofit organizations who we are asking to solve some of our most socially entrenched problems. And we need to give them the infrastructure help and the business skills to help them to do that.
You also talk about using innovative approaches to achieve leveraged results. I'm not sure I understand what that means.
We leverage our money, obviously. We pool our money and are able to have a greater impact with that leveraging. We also leverage our human capital, or what we bring to the table, as we have some, as Jennifer was saying, some folks from the banking industry, some folks from marketing, and we can work as a group and leverage all of this together for a nonprofit that we're in partnership with.
because leverage is one of those bad words.
It's a jargon word.
One of those bad words that we learned during the banking crisis.
Yeah,
That's right. So to date, I understand that you've raised $650,000 or put, you've invested over $650,000 in, I think, what, nine?
Correct.
Nonprofits, as well as probably countless thousands of hours, man hours of volunteer
thousands.
Support. What? Where's the money gone? What groups have benefited from that?
Well, So Much Good is one. The WISH program, the Workforce Initiative for Supportive Housing, which is, I think you had Darren Ash on the program not too long ago, and they've merged into Charlotte Family Housing. That was one of our initial investees. We have invested in communities and schools. We've invested in an arm, the critical home repair arm of Habitat for Humanity. We've actually invested in an initiative, a tutoring initiative that we started from the ground up.
Mm-hmm.
And we've invested lately in an initiative called Sheltering Families Intact, which is a six-agency initiative that is trying to help families stay intact when they come for emergency shelter.
So how does this work? How did you pick those groups to get involved with in terms of monetary support and man-hour support? How did you pick these groups? What did they come to you? Do you seek them out? How do you find them? How do you find each other?
That's a great question. A lot of our initiatives have bubbled up from the passion of the partners involved.
Mm-hmm.
They've been already involved. They have an idea. They can say, what if, or what if we did this? How about if we do that? And we identify nonprofits who are working in that arena that they're passionate about and partner with them. Or a lot of times we will bring in thought leaders and players in the community around a certain issue like affordable housing, and we'll talk with them and help them, or they will help us identify where the needs and gaps are around a certain issue, and we would try to help fill that.
And Seed 20 is another avenue. That's an opportunity we saw in the community for, well, how do we get some of these innovators, some of these people who have a great idea or who have established an organization and have been running it for 2 or 3 years and need to be lifted up and get
because
that exposure.
Because Seed 20 is a relatively new idea. Last year was the first graduating class, for lack of a better term, of Seed 20 participants. What does Seed 20 mean?
Social Entrepreneurs Empowered is what it kind of stands for.
Empowered. That's what the D.
That's the D.
And why 20?
20. There are 20 semifinalists who are selected for the program.
How many non-semifinalists? How many people?
Finalists?
People came to you to narrow it down to the 20?
Oh, that is a good question.
Because you're about to do it again this year. So how many do you have on tap this year that you'll be narrowing down to 20?
We actually just – the applications were submitted in the fall, and we go through a reading process and a review. And I think today or last night we just announced the 20 semifinalists who will start the program next week.
So how does that process work? How do you get to the 20 semifinalists? And I'm going to ask you what you had to do to get there in a second.
Yeah, I mean, in the October time frame, last October of 2011 was the first time we did it, and then October of 2012, we put a call out for applications, and it's a pretty brief, I think, in the grand scheme of things, a pretty brief application. It's a conversational application. It is intended to get the person to tell the story of what they are doing in the Charlotte area or the surrounding counties, how they're improving the community. And then we review those applications in the December timeframe and narrow it down to 20 semifinalists who get to go through the program. And it culminates in an event in March where 10 finalists give a 3-minute pitch.
Which we'll talk about.
Okay.
Venture philanthropy is not a Charlotte idea. As we said, it started in Seattle, Washington. It swept across the country. There are other cities that are doing this. Where do we rank in terms of the other cities that – who name some of the other cities that are involved in this kind of effort. Do we know?
Most of them in Social Venture Partners are in the West.
Mm-hmm.
We're really one of the only – we're the only one in the Southeast. There's one in Boston. There's Minneapolis. But Seattle and California and –
again, on the cutting edge.
Arizona, absolutely.
And, but C20, if I understand this correctly, was a Charlotte idea. It grew out of this organization, correct?
Well, it grew out of Social Venture Partners Network. There are seven other affiliates in this organization who are doing a fast pitch, social fast pitch competition. And a partner and I went to L.A. and actually saw a social fast pitch program, and it was the most moving, exciting, energizing, inspiring
event. I read that.
And
why?
Because you have these innovative nonprofits or these ideas, folks who are standing up there telling the community what they are doing to help that community, and you are so inspired and surprised often that this is going on in your city.
Mm-hmm.
And as we watched that and saw the plethora of ideas that were presented, we thought this would be wonderful to do in Charlotte. And we brought that back, and the partners embraced the idea, and we went to work.
Now, Susan called this a social fast pitch, and this refers back to what Jennifer was calling the 3-minute speeches that these finalists have to prepare for the, I guess for lack of a better term, again, competition that takes place in March. What's so important about explaining your entire organization, its mission, its achievements, and its needs in 3 minutes? What's the magic? Why is that the magic number?
Well, and it comes from the for-profit world of in the venture capital community. It can be the 3-minute, the fast pitch, the elevator pitch. The idea that you're in an elevator with someone and you only have X amount of time to be able to tell your story, make it impactful, and gain their interest. And so every entrepreneur wants to have their elevator pitch or 3-minute pitch ready, mm-hmm. because you never know when you're going to have that opportunity to share it.
Brevity is difficult. Writing for USA Today is a challenge. So, from your point of view, Robin, with these big goals and ideas and dreams for what you could accomplish and what you have accomplished before you approach these people, was it difficult for you to hone that into a 3-minute pitch?
So, Mike, I don't know if you picked up on this since we've been talking, but I do have a tendency to be verbose. So, this this was more than a challenge for me, really to condense your passion, your excitement, your enthusiasm, all of the things that you want to accomplish in the community into 3 minutes is really, really challenging, but healthy. Not only that, just giving you audience.
Now, you're a coach. You're a C20 coach.
Yes.
Is this part of what you do with the people who become finalists?
Yes. So Robin and I worked with Robin. I was her coach last year for C20. And Robin is, you know, she's a force of nature. She's going to be successful, and she's a great communicator already. What I think, to the 3-minute pitch question, mm-hmm. what I think it does is you have to be crystal clear on your mission and vision and how you're going to make it happen in order to make a compelling 3-minute pitch. You have to have a laser focus. And I think Robin is a great communicator. And what I think Seed20 did for her was give her the opportunity to take a step back and really focus on what is her mission and vision. Mm-hmm. And that's what the 3-minute, that's why a 3-minute pitch is such a challenge for some people.
We're talking about Seed20, which is part of Social Venture Partners' effort to bring money and involvement in the community for sustainable nonprofit achievement in this hour. And we come back in a second. I'm going to put Robin Emmons on the point here, to the pitch. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Children's Theater of Charlotte, presenting the Grammy-nominated singer Justin Roberts and the Not Ready for Naptime Players, bringing a high-energy show full of hits and familiar tunes January 19th and 20th. Tickets available at ctcharlotte.org. President Obama picks former Senator Chuck Hagel for Defense Secretary and John Brennan as CIA Director. Diane Rehm and her guests talk about the battles ahead as the president seeks to build his second term team. That's at 10 o'clock in the 10 o'clock hour of the Diane Rehm Show in 20 minutes. If you'd like to join our conversation, now's the time, 704-926 WFAE. That's 704-926-9323, 800-603-WFAE, or online at WFAE.org/Charlotte Talks. We're coming right back.
Hi, I'm John Idstey from NPR News. I want to thank all of you who contributed to this public radio station during the recent pledge drive. You don't have to cover the economy as I do to know that many people have few resources to spare these days. Thank you for sharing your precious resources with us. It makes a huge difference. In fact, if it weren't for your financial support, we simply wouldn't be here every day with the high-quality journalism you've come to expect. Thank you for keeping this important enterprise going.
It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about Social Venture Partners and their C20 effort, which the second class, the year number two, is about to take place here. Susan Daniel is Executive Director of Social Venture Partners. Steve Sellers is one of the partners, and he's also, I've lost your title here, lead partner with the C20 initiative. Jennifer Davis-Martin is C20 coach and a member of the steering committee, and Robin Emmons is executive director of So Much Good, one of the recipients of, well, one of the finalists last year in C20. I have a stopwatch. So people can get an idea of what this is all about and how this works. I know you can't possibly remember your speech from last year, your pitch from last year, but in a few minutes, explain exactly what So Much Good is. No clock.
Thank you, Mike. That's very comforting. So Much Good is a nonprofit that's been established. We are working in the agricultural space. There's a lot of work going on in terms of local foods. Our goal is to provide access to people who would otherwise not have access to this fresh, organic, local movement due to their socioeconomic status or geographic location. So we are growing, educating, providing access, and doing advocacy work around food equity. Mm.
You did that in less than 30 seconds.
We did our job.
You're getting really good
at it. It works.
Now, did you feel when you were doing the pitch, because there's lots at stake here when you go up and make these pitches in front of judges, and you've got 19 other people vying for their support. This is like those shows on television, those inventor shows where you have to make your pitch to the panel. What's it feel like?
Oh, nerve-wracking. It feels like you're standing in front of the world naked. It feels like pressure. To have the support of the partners and to have the opportunity to have that audience is such a great opportunity. Networking with your competitors as well, just the relationships that come out of that, and to know who else is working in this space.
We have two of your competitors in our studio right now. Brennan Graham has been on the program before. He's with The Relatives, and that's an organization out on East Boulevard that helps kids who are having trouble at home, right?
Right.
And what was your pitch like? What was it? What did you ask for, and what did you tell these people last year?
Well, for years we've been known as an organization who served children who were in crisis or who had run away from home or who were homeless. But we've expanded our reach to a different population of youth who are emerging adults. So those young kids who are aging out of the systems and are at risk of being homeless or are currently homeless or in trouble as young adults. And so my pitch was about that program called OnRamp, and just really the mission of that service and how we will impact the emerging youth in the community.
Because kids age out at what, 18?
Yes.
And I remember when I was 18, I was not ready to be on the on-ramp.
Absolutely.
So how could these kids be ready to be on the on-ramp after living troubled lives?
Right.
So there is a need for that.
Oh, there's a tremendous need for it. We see it all the time. We see it with a lot of these kids who are, you know, hanging out right down the street near the transit center or at the malls or wherever. A lot of times they need more support. They need help. They've been left to fend for themselves since they were 16, 17, 18 years old. And so now they're living at the homeless shelters or on the street and just aren't prepared for life. They don't have the education that they need. They don't have a place to live sometimes. They don't have the opportunities for employment. So our role is to to make sure that we can equip them with those tools.
Now, The Relatives is an organization that has a history and a track record and has track record of success. Your organization, So Much Good, is newer than The Relatives. And you had these 18 other people competing for this last year. This seems to be an impossible task because each of them have good points and have things that seem to be, on the surface of it, good for the community and for the people who will be beneficiaries of it. And yet they didn't win. Grub to Grub won. Julie Jones is here from Grub to Grub. Let me hear about your organization, because you won.
Yes.
Yes.
Well, I actually came, and it was a little different than the other organizations because I was just an idea. When I first saw the list come out, I thought, oh, these people are already established and have a board, and they fully know what they're doing, and mine just says Julie Jones. And so it was a really neat time and a neat experience for me, not only honing a pitch, but really honing an idea and honing an organization and figuring out the logistics of how do we make this sizable and scalable for what we want to do and to have an impact in the community.
Now, your organization or your idea, Grub to Grub, and by the way, you can come to my yard anytime and get your
harvest.
Your creatures. Yeah, harvest your creatures. Tell me what this is about.
So what it is, it's a form of composting, but you're not ending up with a soil product. You're ending up with a natural food product for chicken and fish. So you take food waste, meat and dairy products included, and you feed it to the larva of black soldier flies, affectionately known as grubs. And
is
they,
that what they are? I didn't know that. Okay.
And they devour the food within a 24 to 36 hour time frame. And the mature grubs are then the perfect nutritional makeup for chicken and fish.
Yes, as I read, you stick them in a bin with all the waste, and when they eat, and they're tiny. And when they've eaten their fill, they're about an inch long.
Yes.
And they silly, stupidly crawl out of the bin. I don't know why. There's more food to come. But they crawl out of the bin. You harvest them and feed them to chickens. This is the circle of life, isn't
yes.
it? Don't tell Disney. Now, since you've won this award, what has happened to your idea?
Well, we are in the process of creating the infrastructure of the organization. Again, because we weren't already a 501c3, we're in the process of establishing that and coming up with sort of a game plan of how we plan to move forward. The idea is that I'm a second grade teacher, and so mm-hmm. the idea is that we would have an educational component. So we're really helping students to think differently about their food waste and hopefully begin to reduce the amount that they're throwing away.
And this is where the idea came from. You saw all the cafeteria waste.
Yes. Yeah.
Considerable amounts?
Trash cans and trash cans every day.
And there's no odor involved in this, I understand. Ordinary composting takes a long period of time, and there is an odor involved. There's no odor because it's gone.
Right.
Like,
it's
in how many hours?
Fast, 24 to 36 hours.
These things are voracious eaters, aren't they?
They are.
How many grubs in a barrel?
Well, it takes thousands of grubs. So
I got to tell you, this is a disgusting idea. Now, why? I know you weren't the judges here, but why did the judges choose an idea mm-hmm. over organizations that have a track record, in the case of The Relatives, and who have gotten underway and have made an impact already in terms of so much good? Why an idea?
I would say in this case, the criteria for the judging was the presentation, but it was also the innovation. Is this an idea that is important? Would it make an impact?
Mm-hmm.
And the potential for tangible impact in the society. And I think Julie nailed it all the way around with her idea and her potential impact and her wonderful presentation.
What was the presentation like?
She stood up, and if I recall, she said, "Hello, I am a second grade teacher." And she went on to talk about how she saw the waste in the school and then presented her idea. And she did it with passion and with poise and
That's because she's used to you're used to being in front of people, aren't you, when you talk?
Yeah. And that's all we are. It's just a big group of kids.
So tell me the difference between the clients or the organizations that you chose to work with prior to the inception of Seed20 and the organizations that come to you and become finalists for Seed20. What's the difference in what kinds of organizations or what kinds of projects they're involved in or what kinds of ideas they have as opposed to what you more traditionally work with?
Prior to Seed20? Mm-hmm. And there are similarities also in that as social venture partners, we worked with companies that had ideas and growing initiatives that we could support. Seed20 enables us to reach quickly out into the region and identify 20 nonprofit initiatives that they all have great promise. They all can have a significant impact because they were selected that way. And this is a way to provide all 20, because all 20 are showcased. So our goal is that all 20 benefit and showcase them quickly into the community.
Now, I'm sorry.
And they may end up in, as with Robin, the thought is they eventually could become part of the social venture partners portfolio. But this is an event and a program that provides coaching to them to then provide exposure at the event for all 20 to a broader range.
Now, I watched a little short video of last year's presentation yesterday, and I know that there is a prize for the winner. The Grub to Grub project won that prize. But then, as you said, when you saw this in California, it was kind of inspirational and surprising to the people who went out to see it from social venture partners. And evidently, that same effect took hold at your event last year because somebody came forward, several people came forward, and gave everybody who was a finalist money.
It was really wonderful. We had
unexpected too.
Unexpected. Yeah. We had 10 phenomenal finalists, and they really knocked our homework. They did a great job. We had a sold out event, standing room only, and at the end, Grub to Grub won, and Henry Owen with Friendship Garden won. And so Jay Everett of Wells Fargo spontaneously said that he would like to give $1,000 to each of the finalists who did not win a cash award. And following that, we had an anonymous donor in the audience that did the same thing. So the energy was palpable and exciting.
Now, Grub to Grub deals with the end product of food. but what was the one that you just talked about that got you?
Friendship Gardens.
Friendship Gardens and So Much Good deal with bringing food to the table. And we've done programs on this show about food deserts where if you live in a low-income area, it's sometimes very difficult to get food that's nutritious. Fast food becomes the easy thing because it's right there on the corner, but you don't have a lot of fresh produce, fresh from my farm produce, et cetera, et cetera. And so you're trying to make that happen. And that seems to be a running theme with some of these people who have come to you in C20, bringing food to the table that might not otherwise be available. Mm-hmm. How successful have you been?
Oh, well, this has been a long-term problem, as you know, Mike. We now have a name for it. We're calling it food desert. Mm-hmm. So it's been pretty intractable. So we've had some success. We've served about 600 families here in the Northwest Corridor of the city over the course of the last 3 years. But, of course, that is a very small proportion of the 73,000 estimated that are living in these communities. Now, I should say that also there are this is the issue of food deserts, but there's also the issue of food insecurity. Sometimes there are options in the community, but people don't have money. It's unaffordable, or it's not the best produce that we can provide them that would eliminate some of these health disparities. So it's a couple of issues that we're tackling in various ways.
And we're also there's an article in the paper yesterday that green vegetables, we are discovering, build muscle.
Imagine that.
I'm shocked.
Which, much to my chagrin, my mother was right about that. Now, what kind of coaching did you have to give Robin here, Jennifer?
So the C20 program, the participants get informed, the semifinalists get informed in the January timeframe, and then we spend an initial workshop together where the coaches and the participants learn basic presentation skills and techniques. And then over the next 7 weeks, the coaches work with the participants on their pitches. So they stand up in front of a room full of people. In a couple weeks, they'll do this year's class, and they start. They try their first 3-minute pitch. And some, I would say last year, I felt like they didn't need any help. Mm-hmm. They stood up that first night and nailed it. I was in tears the first, some of the first participants. And some progressed so much over that 7-week period. And then a couple weeks before the big event, 10 finalists are selected to give their 3-minute pitch the night of. But all 20 get exposure through the program and the night of. Everyone has a display opportunity at the night of the big event. And so the coaching is business people in the community. It doesn't necessarily have to be partners. Anyone who has a little bit of ability to help with presentation skills, that type of thing. And we spend those sessions helping them hone their pitch.
In the non-C20 people that you work with, organizations that you work with, I know that you look for measurable outcomes. Do you set goals? I mean, how do you measure that outcome? Are there expectations that have to be met? And if they don't meet them, what happens?
In the C20?
Well, in the normal school.
In the other investees.
Yeah. Oh, yes. We do set goals with the community partners that we invest in, and we set them together and we put those in a contract, and they, while we don't, we become more of a trusted ally, mm-hmm. rather than, I may say, a typical funder. They do report and they do come back to the partnership in 6 months, in a year, and share the progress that they've made toward the goals that we set together.
Mostly success stories?
Yes, mostly success stories. We've had lessons learned, and we take risk. One of the differences in us is being able to take risk and think big. So we've had some failures, but mostly success.
That's Susan Daniel. She's Executive Director of Social Venture Partners. Steve Sellers is one of the partners and involved in the C20 movement. Jennifer Davis Martin is a C20 coach. And Robin Emmons, Executive Director of So Much Good, one of the finalists in C20 last year. Thank you all for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you.